Hi everyone, I'm Kintsune, and this week I'm joined by everyone's favorite boomer on crypto Twitter, the one and only Dr. Lawrence Day. I always have something here where I kind of try and like highlight something about my guest or something that we talked about, but with Lawrence the entire thing was just, as he would say, absolute scenes. We cracked up, we had really smart conversation. Well, Lawrence had really smart conversations, you know, I just said kind of whatever. We talk about everything from how Lawrence got started back in the days where the white paper was still new for Bitcoin, to where he sees the scene heading in 5 years, to his shameful and disgusting lack of anime knowledge. As always, please listen and enjoy. If you have the time, please like, subscribe, leave a rating for us on any podcast app or platform of your choice. And without any further ado, I give you the infamous Dr. Lawrence Day. I'm going to just say this up top. You know, we're not going to say the name, right?
Yep.
We're not going to say the name. We're not going to do that. But the people that we voluntarily choose to spend quite a bit of time with in our day are just like horrible, these horrible, deranged, like sick, deeply sick people, like deeply mentally unwell, cruel, greedy, venial.
And the reason that I spend so much. The reason I spend so much time in that room is because they're just like me, for real, for real.
It is literally it's like, damn, for real, he's just like me. I mean, it is, you know, all jokes aside, like very nice to have so many kind of kindred spirits.
Yeah.
I guess it's funny, you have kind of like a, and you're very open about this, you know, like a semi, you know, semi-doxed. What some could say, the semi is doing a lot of work there. You're a fairly doxed person, right? I'm literally looking at your face right now. is that kind of like weird to then be in a room full of like completely anonymous weirdos, or do you find it like an advantage?
Not an advantage at all. In fact, I thought it was going to start by backfiring, right? When I first got invited in, I was wondering, because I think at the time I either had my syndrome picture or a variant of my face and my full name. And I did think for a little while that I was, I'd been invited by accident. Like I had no idea the basis upon which I'd been invited. Right. So I was like, in retrospect, it turns out everyone was the same person just in various guises. So it worked really well as a fit, but, yeah, for a while I was like, you know, like, have I just like voluntarily walked into a roast because I'm the only one here with my real name?
Right, yeah.
And the one thing that I really enjoy about this group is periodically, like, people will leave or they'll get deactivated. May Pete rest in peace. And someone else will join in and I won't know who they are. And I'll hang around for a few weeks or so. And then, like, you know, time goes by and all of a sudden they're one of my best friends on Twitter.
Easily, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm very much in the same way, like, and not to make this, you know, whole conversation about one super chat, because I think it is a universal phenomenon, right? The group chat as a thing, like, there really is nothing kind of more complimentary than being invited into a back room. Where everyone's having drinks and getting to fuck around. It is just very funny that in a room full of like, kind of like thirsty, mentally ill, anime teenagers, that everyone's best friend is like a doxed guy who has like a nice, like, seemingly normal life and like a job and like a spouse. Like, it is very, I mean, it is one of those great signs of like, it is not only an inclusive space, but I think you actually get to have a certain type of fun with it that other people don't.
Yeah. I was saying this to someone recently. I can't remember who. I came up, you know, as a teenager in South Africa in the days of like 56k DSL, and so, you know, like, IRC was the chat there, so I'm in my early 30s, so we're talking, you know, 2002, 2003, where, you know, whatever kind of IRC chat was there was kind of the hub, And for me at the time, it was Counter-Strike, 1.5 and then 1.6. And so, like, you know, there wasn't really, I think now you've got all these sites that you can register into, and they'll put you into games, like, according to skill, whatever. There wasn't any of that. It was really just, you know, find people to play with. So I spent 5 years, you know, well, pretty much up until I went back to the UK, in a room which was just text with a bunch of people who would never dox their names. Right? And that tracked really well to Twitter. I think, you know, in that sense, crypto's kind of a carry-on of this, at least at a non-culture, because I have people that I go back to South Africa to visit, and I'll go and have dinner and drinks with them, and I will still refer to them by their nicknames. There's one or two cases where I still do not know what their names are, and I've known them now for, like, for 15, 20 years.
Sure, of course.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, that is like a quintessential part of the internet, because we're the same age almost. I'm slightly younger than you. But that, I mean, that really was, you know, such a period of history that I think it's very funny that, like, a lot of these 18, 19 year olds, which is also a very funny thing to be like, yeah, I'm 30 and I love hanging out with my 19-year-old internet friends.
Yeah.
But it is kind of something that they, you know, like, didn't get to maybe experience in the same way. Like, they were born into a world of intercommunication that made more sense. They weren't, like, you know, honestly talking to, like, Russians and pedophiles and, like,
spicy
4chan weirdos on, like, illicit chat rooms trying to get, you know, trying to rank up in CSGO, in Counter-Strike. So it's like, it is funny. It's like the last meeting grounds maybe of our generation gap of internet culture, right?
I think that's probably true. I something hit quite close to home with me the other day. I was speaking to a 17-year-old. So, you know, just about to age out of working at Rari Capital. And before he gets tossed onto the street, we were having this conversation about, you know, the things that he's seen kind of in his experience of dealing with the non-culture in his life. And he found it a bit weird that I pointed out to him that I was doing pretty much exactly the same thing before he was born.
Yeah, crazy.
Like, nothing changes in the world. It's comforting, right? So I have this doxed persona. I have alts. You will never find good luck. But this is the one that I engage with most now. It's my main, my doxed main.
Yeah.
I finally started ramping activity back into it. And I think what you've seen lately is I've changed my handle a little bit. I'm rotating slowly back into semi-anon, one of these, if you know, you knows.
Yeah.
But it takes no effort at all to work out who I am. And I don't know if that's, I think, influence, perhaps, of spending as much time and stepping back into old habits, or just that I find the fact that I used to wear a doctor title on Twitter incredibly cringe. Because I had a conversation with Guillermo about this at a Zuma Hacker House in Denver. I think he was 12 days away from his PhD defense when we spoke. And I said, are you going to, you know, when you finally get it, are you going to put a title on this thing? He's like, I would sooner hang myself.
Yeah, he's a fuck no. Are you kidding me?
Well, the difference between that is that Guillermo is cool and I am not.
Well, it's funny, you know, when you and I first met, I was like, damn, that's so funny, like, putting doctor as, like, a joke in your name. And I was like, oh, shit, no, this guy, this is
not a joke.
Like, yeah. This motherfucker is actually, you know. Yeah, I think it's funny. I think, you know, if anything, it is encouraging to me, you know, that there can still be, you know, a place in the world to be doxed and be accepted in the community. And also, you know, a little bit of it is, I mean, you're a bit of a ledge, right? Like, if you are doxed and people know who you are, it's like kind of like, yeah, what the, I mean, the fuck are you going to do? And you know, I think you're always very humble. But I do think, you know, you maybe are one of these people that is incredibly influential in a certain regard in this space. And it is kind of like, it is befitting that we know who you are, because we know who, like, a lot of the other legends are, relatively speaking.
As much as I'd love to nod and agree at this, and have an ego that would let me if I had another beer in me, I'm not sure if that's the case, right? I mean, like, I've been around for ages, but, like, it was always, like, in this, like, doxed form, always really low-key.
Yeah.
It's only been really recently that I've decided, right, I'm, you know, fine, here I am. I think that kind of started with giving a talk at SCC last year, and finally starting to engage with some group chats. Like, we were just talking about that. There's nothing nicer than being invited into a back room, as it were. And I'm pretty sure I can turn that into an innuendo of sorts, but I'm not going to try.
I'm pretty sure someone's already doing it. I mean, it's going to be a quote. Well, you know, I mean, it's funny. I mean, you know, and it can be as long or as short, or even if it's too tedious, we can skip it entirely. But, you know, do you want to talk about how you, like, what was your first entry point? Because we can just skip all that boring shit if you want. But I'm genuinely curious. And I think a lot of people are genuinely curious because, you know, a lot of the answers for a lot of people right now, particularly of a certain age range, are like, oh, I saw this shit on the internet and I wanted to make money while working my parents. Yeah. House, you know, whatever, or I played RuneScape and I was good at that, and that the RuneScape to crypto pipeline, the fucking your first hit of crack to living on the streets, right? So it's like, yeah, your story kind of predates, I feel like, that. So I mean,
yeah, it does. It's funny you mentioned that, yeah, because FBI Fanboys was exactly that, right? I think somebody, I should probably have some exposure to that, and that was it.
Yeah.
So, mine started in 2012 in the research lab of the postdoc office that I was working in. So the way that this worked was in term time, you know, you'd have your office, but it would mostly be there for open hour, for office hours for undergrads to kind of like stick their terrified heads around and ask questions. But when the term wasn't there, you still had to get your work done. And normally that comprised know, writing papers or just generally getting through the stack of stuff that you need to get through. But what it actually turned out being, especially if you found a group of people that were kind of your kindred spirits quite early on, was just doing whatever you wanted. And in our, in our event, that turned out to be things like building an 8x8 LED cube and programming it to flash different patterns, or making a floppy disk orchestra. And one day, one of the things, there are YouTube videos for this, I'll send them to you at some point so you can have a look. And the one day, one of the things that just fell into our email inbox was the Bitcoin white paper. So, you know, this, it wasn't new at this point, right? So we're talking 2012, but I think it was still viable to at least attempt to crack open a GPU, a CPU miner. And so we did exactly that. I went on Amazon and I ordered a bunch of pieces, from some Chinese marketplace, and we built a machine for fun, sorted out how to, you know, to get it all running, and plugged it all in and put it in the air conditioning vents in our office, immediately blowing out the power supply and covering the office, because it's the air duct vents, pumping black smoke all around the School of Computer Science. So, like, that was kind of my intro to getting into like what it meant to mine crypto. I don't think anyone really at the time, except for the true dyed-in-the-wool believers, really kind of understood what it meant at a societal level, you know, to the degree that there are people that believe in this. And I think I do. I'm not entirely sure yet. I'm here, aren't I?
Right.
But I put it to the side for a while. I think I ended up buying or mining a combination of about 30 Bitcoin, losing the keys, so you're welcome, and then leaving it alone. And I moved to the States for a while to work at a certain large microchip company, came back, and as I finished everything up, the chatter was happening about Ethereum starting.
Yeah.
And I found myself looking at the Ethereum ICO setup and deciding that I couldn't be bothered, the regret that I will carry with me for my entire life. Let's not pretend I wouldn't have sold it for a quick 3x.
Easily. Like,
if I said, it's complete cope to imagine I would have done anything other than that.
Can you imagine that shit hit $100? You would have been like, Mike, I'm out of here. Absolutely. Are you kidding?
Outrageous
me?
Scenes. Yeah. And I finished everything up at university and I moved to banking. I didn't want to go to London because I hate the idea of London as a city. So I moved to Hot London, you know, just for a change in pace. I went to Singapore and Ethereum launched. And then, as is the way of things, you know, papers started going around. You started catching up on things. I wasn't really interested in it until about the middle of 2017.
Mm-hmm.
started reading around what was there. I think solidity at the time was either late 0.3 or early 0.4. I started then writing solidity the same day that DevOps 199 bricked the parity multisig. So I have a very clear...
Yeah, you have a fixed moment in time.
Yeah, exactly. And I may or may not be DevOps. No, certainly not.
This would be a good docs.
And yeah, that was kind of it. I tinkered around for a little bit on stuff of absolutely no importance. Just really learning how things worked. And I, work got back in the way. I'd been around on Twitter for a while since then. And then I kind of really went quiet for a bit, just because life, and resurfaced a little bit in 2019. And I still consider that quite like late in the game, which I find quite weird because you get people who I think nowadays, especially in the NFT scene,
totally
are considering themselves grizzled veterans because they got here in January 2020.
Listen, I've seen some shit you couldn't believe.
By which point, I'd had three punks and dumped them in 2018, thinking that they were never going to go anywhere.
Well, yeah, these are clearly bullshit. Why would these ever be worth any amount of money? It doesn't make any sense. It's a fucking picture.
This is, trust me, this is cope that I tell myself every night before I go to bed.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you don't have the cope, you don't have anything.
But yeah, I don't write that much code anymore. I'll talk to people like I think things through like data. I can still program Solidity. I know enough to be dangerous, after several years at it. But slowly migrating now more towards education, more of which kind of will come out in the future. But I think, yeah, when I reflect on it, I've been around too long to not have made enough to quit and live in an island. But it turns out I don't want to be anywhere else.
Yeah. Well, it is funny. I mean, there are very few people, I think, who are still in the space from that time, right? I had a friend senior year of high school who was like, we gotta mine this shit. It was 2011, 2012, maybe he wanted to do Litecoin. And I remember being like, whatever, nerd, I will continue to drink vodka and Red Bull at
and
terrible
now you're
parties.
Doing a crypto podcast. How far
yeah, it's literally, and I regret it. And what's fucked up? I have not heard from that man in probably 10 years, and I fully believe him to be rich.
It's because he lives in the Bahamas, and he hasn't spoken to someone that he hasn't employed in the last 6 years. That's
he threw
why.
His phone into the fucking ocean and forgot about where he came from. Well, no, but in a very significant way, it is like, you also were in the rare position, right? Like I, and some other people in our range were like high schoolers who were like fucking around on the internet. You had like actually a little more access to this, more education around it. You were in like one of these prime, you kind of were a man at the most dangerous point in time for someone of your talents. And I think that's really compelling. I think that's really fascinating. I mean, I genuinely think that's why people respond to you and think you're very, like, cool. I think you're cool.
Thanks very much. If you can tell my wife that, I'd appreciate that.
I've been waiting for someone on Twitter to one time say a nice thing about me and get back to my wife. I told her today, I was like, I'm interviewing Lawrence. She's like, who the fuck is this Lawrence guy that you talk about? I'm like, no, he's my friend from the internet. He's a... guy, he lives in the UK. He's got that accent. We do memes, and she's like, "This is all bullshit." Like, just like tell me you're doing. Tell me this is like Silk Road drugs. Tell me you're just playing video games with somebody.
To be fair, my wife, who is a real doctor, a pediatric consultant trainee, is far more understanding than I deserve. Of the fact that to the untrained eye and to most trained eyes, my day comprises of pissing around on the internet. And we kind of have this entente cordiale where I simply don't tell her what I've done in a given
day.
So long as the bills get paid. I'm like, this works absolutely fine. You don't tell me about baby's lungs that you squeeze to help them breathe.
Oh my God.
I won't tell you about the banger shit post that I dropped on Twitter earlier.
Yeah, no one needs to know that I'm engaged in what some might call femboy discourse. And then, of course, you have to explain what that even means.
Some of my favorite people are sending me pictures of themselves in thigh highs. That's why they're my favorite people.
Yeah, I think I still do want to discuss femboys. Not in any specific way, more in the sense of like, it is very funny, I imagine, in your life, you're a doctor, you are a doctor of not of medicine, but of other doctoring. And you've come to this space and the vernacular, the language, the social signifier is, yeah, like effeminate anime boys in thigh highs. Let me just ask you, how has femboys changed your life? And would you say for the better?
You know that utopia picture of the world if?
Yeah, of course.
It's that. One of the things that I think this is almost an aphorism at this point, right? Some of the most frightening intellectuals I've met in the cryptography space or cypherpunks tend to be femboys or trans. And it's in this both, I can't tell what it is about it, about the whole approach to life that really resonates with me. I'm a big fan of it, is what I'll say. I will proudly announce that I'm a femboy appreciator.
It's funny, you know, and far be it ever for two, you know, cis white men to ever discuss things like that, but I do think it is tied to like the desire for like authentic identity and like the authentic sense of self, right?
Yeah.
Which is also that we're all going for. I just think it is so like, it is so funny to imagine like people having to get briefed at financial firms what a femboy is, like,
well,
like talk about, learn what stummy is. Like there is some stooge at some, you know, VC firm who's looking up like proof of bulge and being like, what the fuck is this?
What's that immortal tweet, right? You've just graduated Harvard with a $190,000 degree. You've sat down at a VC thing and the first thing you have to do is pretend to be a femboy and join a Discord to spam for whitelist.
I mean, but it's true, you know.
That, but unironically, right?
Unironically true. Well, it's the same, you know, you got to consider your poor, whoever your guy is at the FBI who has to, like, you know, stalk you online, just, like, putting on the cat ears for the day, rolling his eyes, being like, I can't believe I have to do this shit again.
Just two more years of this, and I get put back into tax fraud where I belong.
I get to go fight international crime and terror. I was supposed to be shooting cartel members.
This is what I trained in the academy for.
Staring at the gun right next to the like tail butt plug that's sitting on his desk. He's like, oh, God damn it. Another
that
day.
Is his Hitachi wand. Yeah.
It is funny though, like, right, like things are very lighthearted. It's very goofy. And then at the same time, there is like an ungodly amount of money flowing around, right? Like it is one of those things where it's like, it's very funny when how jokey joke and everybody is, but I don't know, when people go serious, when you see like the really giga-brained chads like make a play or make a move, and I feel very lucky, like as someone who is not that at all, like being in some of the group chats that we are, like getting to see when people snap into like go mode. I remember there was one night where everybody just started doing zip stuff.
Yeah.
Like everybody was trying to, it was like, I don't know, like middle of the night, my time. And it was just like, boom, boom, boom. People are saying, do this, sell. Like it was crazy. And then literally 20 minutes later, you know, someone is posting like mind scarring hentai and everybody is doing the sweating face emoji. Like, do you think that's kind of necessary? Like if we're dealing with these incalculable figures and things are moving so quickly that commiserately, it almost has to be like, you have to be blowing off this steam somehow. You have to be burning this stress and this seriousness.
I think maybe there's two bits to it, right? Like on one hand, folk are living their best lives and, That's great. I am entirely here for it. Like, as I'm like the older side of CT in general, I am delighted to see this happening. At the same time, I'm still sufficiently, I think, TradFi pilled in that I worked in a bank for 4 and a bit years. And I still kind of lean on credentialism when it suits my purposes. It's a habit I'm trying to get rid of. But yeah, I think. When I see like figures that are thrown around, like when you see like, oh yeah, we've just raised something at $150 million valuation. What have we got? Oh, we've got a landing page and 50 lines of Solidity.
Yeah.
We'll appeal to the 14-year-olds to build it for us. I guess, yeah. a release of stress is one way to put kind of the deranged behavior on the internet. Not prescribing that purely to femboys. That's just the internet.
In general, right? Just the sum totality of people schizophrenically shitposting.
Yeah. I genuinely don't know if there's something behind the veil that is just kind of humorous cope. I truly don't know. Mostly because I don't think I've ever really sat down for long enough to properly think about it, right? I was sitting down for dinner at in Denver with folk who run, you know, $500 million evaluate protocols, and everyone's quite down to earth until you make a hentai joke, and then the gloves are completely off.
Truly unhinged.
Yeah, being just going feral in public. it's wonderful.
I think there is something there to that. Definitely, you know, it's an old adage, and it's kind of like a boring trope at this point that, like, you know, the investment banker leaves his job and go gets the shit kicked out of him by a dominatrix for 4 hours to, like, relieve stress, which is also, I will say, not a joke. I had a friend who was a dominatrix on Wall Street, and she was like, yeah, it's all just these, like, 30-year-olds, Ivy League boys that just want to get their shit stomped. But I do think it is a thing of, like, you get to unapologetically be yourself in a very open way. And when you say, like, you know, you're excited at seeing people living their best lives, you know, like, growing up as a person who has identified as queer and who has, you know, questioned my cis persona at various points in my life, it is very unthinkable for me to, like, now see a world where everyone can be very free and very open with themselves. Not that the, you know, the bigots aren't there, as we've seen recently in crypto, but that it is a space that is so inherently open and built around the idea of sovereign identity and sovereign sense of self, which it feels empowering to me in a way that kind of was inconceivable, you know, when I was like a purple-haired 14-year-old that was like, maybe I'm different. maybe things are different for me. And now, you know, it's like,
you're absolutely just unique and on.
I'm a special, and now, you know, it's like we have friends who are posting themselves with their, like, guns and their thigh highs, like, just got done with coding. Like, it's
an aesthetic that I will never get tired of.
I love, like, it.
That is a vibe.
The femboy battalion look is just so, yeah, they're like militant anarchist. You know, that the envy insurgent terrorist is just, like, my favorite. It's so cool.
I have no doubt that come the revolution, I would probably be up against the wall. And I'd be glad to do it, provided I was shown a bit of thigh high in the process.
You go to your death smiling as a cat Arab non-binary.
Yeah,
crypto punk shoots you directly in the head with a pink AK-47 with a Hello Kitty decal. There are so many worse ways to go. You know, he died as he lived. Questioning it all. Just the image of you with, like, this fucking huge grin on your face. It's like the most beautiful person you can imagine from the future with, like, different colored irises just garrots you in an alley.
He died as he lived. I think I'm going to have to make, like, 3 commissions after this podcast.
Oh, my God, yeah. I feel like I keep commissioning things from Fiverr artists, and I always have to explain so much. Like, I was trying to do a doujin of me and Indigo being gay, and the artist was literally like, I don't know about this, not for any boy love reasons, but it's like, is this, like, a weird crypto,
is this a thing? Should I be charging more?
Yeah, like, literally,
you absolutely should.
You, like, crank this up. I'm, like, looking at their $35 price, like, I'm gonna tokenize this and I'm gonna sell this for 10 Ethereum. the Fiverr artist is really the most shafted person in the universe right now. It is funny to see all of these NFT collections and just be like, on the backs of this, there is, like, a, you know, like a 20-year-old Russian graphic designer who learned how to draw anime style, who's just cranking out 5,000 maids.
That is something that angers me a little bit about JPEG Frenzy, as it is, in this. You know, in vanishingly few cases, you get to see props and profit accrue back to the original creator. I don't think there's a viable solution for this. I think so long as, you know, you're going to have grifty teams that are doing their, like, kind of perpetual dumps of new things. And, you know, you see folk who go on Five and Out, like, I won't do any NFT work. It's very easy to kind of subvert that by just asking the question correctly.
It's funny to me, you know, I am like one strand of moral fiber away from doing like a 10,000, you know, PFP pump it down. Like it's one, it really, like there are some days I wake up and I'm like, you know what, actually, fuck this shit. I'm ready to be a terrible person. But it is alarming to me. I think there's something interesting, kind of a larger point there. This is my favorite thing about this podcast is we'll talk about something and then I'll be like, wait, there might be a salient point here. And then I get to drop my voice down to like this level. And I get to kind of do my Terry Gross interview. And I'm like,
well, introspective
Lawrence,
thought.
Lawrence, do you think that there is like a point there? Like there will always be these grifty people, whatever, that crypto like consistently refuses to learn its lesson. Like we have seen these things happen so many times. We've seen rugs happen so many times. We've seen X, Y, and Z happen so many times. And there are still people falling for it. And there are still people like, you know, wearing this clearly rugged NFT project with pride and be like, no, they're going to come back to us. We're going to go here. Is that like I mean, that's not a crypto
exclusive. I am my ex and my ex is me.
Right.
Meanwhile, whoever made
why I did not accept $200 million for my punk. My punk is my
Jesus.
Brand.
I think about that tweet so much.
Daily.
I'll be in the shops and I'll be looking at milk and I'll just remember that tweet.
I'll be holding a piece of fruit and I'll think about it and I'll tense and I'll just destroy whatever I'm like. I'll crush the apple. It fills me with an anima, and only in a way of like someone who like grew up, you know, with very little money. I just think about that. And I'm just like, I would genuinely shoot my own father in the face for that money, and before I did so, he would shake my hand and say he was proud of me.
Congratulations.
He'd be like, good for you, motherfucker, we're out. But yeah, I mean, to that point, like, do you think it is a crypto problem?
I having seen and read so many of the horror stories in TradFi, as part of kind of both my job working in risk in the past and just the reading around doing kind of risk qualifications, mm-hmm. and a financial engineering master's that I did, which really was just like for the first bit was just read about how Enron fucked around and found out. We're never going to be able to get away from the scourge of grift ever. I think I could do an entire podcast like with myself as the host going on about this, talking to people about kind of ways that they think this should be fixed or rather ameliorated. And whether they should in the first place, right? I won't get into the stuff in this podcast, but like I've got my own like little ideology on this. I think the best you can do is make things difficult, right? So you've got people that are doing God's work, like Zach, and to a lesser
dark,
degree,
the
like,
fucking I mean, this Dark is just Knight specific. Himself.
Exactly,
it's swooping.
And to a lesser degree, a lot of people who are doing the same kind of work on a kind of less industrial scale. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of specifically within the NFT space. Like we all know that it's the case in DeFi as well, right? I think we're so inured to the trauma of seeing, you know, like a rug or something that, you know, whenever you see an exploit, the automatic assumption is, oh, it was an inside job. You know, who did this? Why was it the devs? And so, like, you know, today, the day that we're filming this, you've got Sam who's tweeting, you know, I've sent out two messages today and they're not responding, right? And everyone just sat up and went, oh? Like, everyone's pulling stuff out of farms, kind of waiting for the asteroid to hit.
Oh, my God. It's one of the worst things that you can see in your day as like, as a person. And at the same time, fills me with, like, a deep, I will almost say, like, sexual excitement. I'm just, like, something, like, the blood is about to be in the water, and, like, I'm going to get to see it. Because also, like, you know, I'm not a trader or anything. I don't really have a huge amount of skin in the game because I don't have a huge amount of skin. Well, okay, that was going to sound fucking insane, but I don't, you know, in the metaphor, I don't have a lot of skin, but it is one of those things that everyone perks up. It's like being in a rainforest and something changes, right? And
yeah.
Everything comes out of its hole to freeze.
Yeah, it's like it's rubbernecking combined with Schadenfreude, right? And and anyone that says that they don't find it at least appealing to watch is a liar.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, humans love car accidents, right? Like, humans love watching a car crash. Humans love watching a tragedy. I mean, is it one of those things that, you know, let's take it off then the burden of the grifter. Let's leave the poor grifter out of this, okay, Doc? Let's not fucking put it on
Yeah, all right, fine. Okay, that's still making an honest looking.
Bigot. But, like, if we accept that grifting will happen forever, that there were always people gaming the system, you know, where does the responsibility lie on us to, like, you know, if you ever want a real heartbreaking experience, which we see all the time on Twitter, but if you go on, like, CoinMarketCap and click on a random shitcoin and click on the comments or the predictions, and you just see these people being like, this one is going, this is, like, the life changer, this is everything, and you're just like, but this is so clearly, is it a matter of education? Is it like, I don't want to say just American, but like American exceptionalism, where you go, wait, but I am special. I understand this differently than everyone else. This one will work for me.
I don't know, right? I've started trying to move away from pointing at Dunning-Kruger as the as the explanation for all of this, which is quite hand-wavy, because there's some evidence that suggests that Dunning-Kruger isn't actually a thing. But I do think there is that, there's a chart that goes around, which is very much kind of like a confidence versus knowledge graph of people that get into crypto for the first time, right? And it really depends on whether you come at it from first principles or whether you come at it because you've seen it from... from your, you know, a YouTube video or an advert or something. And you and I are, I suspect, old enough and grumpy enough to kind of shake our fists a little bit. Very old man yells at sky at folk who go, oh, well, my first introduction to this was, oh, I saw a hex bus driving around in London, right? Because, like, my own intro was chatting about ECDSA with the cryptography lab in a postdoc institution. That doesn't make me better than anyone, right? It just means that I did the work first, and to be fair, I probably could have saved a year of my life by not doing that.
Sure.
I think there's so many vectors to get bamboozled on now, right? Like, look at Dogecoin. Or look at kind of any dog money.
Sorry, you see, like, Dogecoin is not good. I gotta pull my shit out really quick. Are you serious? This is a bad.
You're telling me that I should not have double mortgaged my house to buy dog money. I'll categorically say, yeah, you shouldn't have done that. And I used to mine Doge. I think, like, yeah, here's a good example, right? You know, when not even Dogecoin millionaire, but like every time you see someone who's made it big on dog money, right? You inevitably see a wave of TikTok videos or YouTubes or whatever that go, oh, you know, oh, I can't wait for this token to hit $1, right? And I don't know if that's a fundamental misunderstanding of macroeconomics,
right,
or just maths, or, like, you know, kind of GDPs of nations.
Yeah.
And I think it's very, very easy to drink the Kool-Aid and walk into a Jonestown. But with that said, I don't also think it's kind of everyone's responsibility to go, here is the set syllabus of things that you need to read and pass a test on before you should be allowed to do these things. Because, well, caveat emptor is a thing. Carpe diem is a thing as well. Right. And the minute you start kind of saying, you need to understand this first before you do a dumb punt, you're at licenses again. You're at your Series N things that you need for qualified investors in the States, which I am perpetually grateful that I do not live in, even though I like the country.
Really? We can swap. I'll fucking go where you are. Well, I was going to say, there is a version of that, right? Like, or people doing that with a good faith effort, at least, like Pentacle comes to mind, right? Yeah. As being, at the very least, we can educate these people who are new.
I will fight in the trenches for Pentacle's website. I was actually saying this to a... yesterday, that's one of the things that I'm working on. I won't say too much about it now because this final form still isn't really decided yet, but is kind of fitting in the middle ground in solidity and cryptography between CryptoKitties and just fork Aave and look at it yourself. And in terms of kind of stuff that sits there, that's already there as very like a look around, you've got things like Pentacle's website, you've got Eth Build, you know, Austin Griffith stuff. You've got Eth Scaffold, rather, sorry. You've got Dev Pilney, that new effort that's coming out. You've got some new stuff that's coming out from Olympus, I think it's the Artemis Academy. So it does feel like there's been this kind of nascent thing that's appeared, that, okay, we need to educate more people kind of beyond just here's the basics, get on with it. But with that said, that also kind of assumes that everyone that's getting into this stuff is just looking to dev or, you know, to kind of fundamentally understand DeFi.
Right.
And that doesn't account for people who are punting into dog money.
Sure.
Or JPEGs. And I think let them eat cake.
Yeah, I mean, that is the clear, if we are setting up a financial system that is open to everybody, is open to participation, no matter what that participation looks like, right? And
yeah.
You know, it's just as much your right to, well, I mean, except for that one guy that made like, what, like $5 billion on Shiba Inu or whatever, the weirdest outlier, which I convince is like some psyop, you know, that was made by a TikTok guru just to fuck with everybody and get more views.
Find out it was team executive and will be coping and seething for the next 3 years.
Look, I was so unsettled, and no disrespect, no hate, I was so unsettled the first time I saw one of those videos. I was like, how the fuck old am I? Like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Or when, who is it? Paradigm hired a high schooler. Massive respect to that, and very cool.
Yeah, well, yeah. If you want a glimpse of the future, picture you walking out of your degree and finding that transmissions has taken three of your jobs.
Yeah, as forever. Somebody who got a finance degree from a state school, and didn't particularly even do very well on that, my job has already been taken many times over, sir.
And you're getting wrecked by someone who goes to high school in their spare time. Feels
it
good.
Is such so emasculating. I think that's why I try and stay like zoomer cool. It's like I just keep getting tattoos so that people will think maybe this guy isn't fucking a loser. This is a little real. Well, I was going to say, so right then, if like education is the goal, and I think education is the place we wind up on. One of the ways that I got into crypto in this persona, you know, because I have not always been Kitsune. I have not always been, you know, the same as anybody. You arrive at you know, whatever figure you have. Was where I started in education myself. And I really, I worked as... This is not my interview, but this is a salient point. I worked as an educator, like a guide builder, tutorial maker for like a TikTok investing community, because I wanted to like see what people were doing. I wanted to like get a glimpse of this younger generation. And it really was, I mean, it was alarming, like the level that people did not know. And it was also alarming the level that people didn't care. They were like, well, I buy the thing in the app that this guy on TikTok told me to buy. And then I make money, and I don't really, none of it really matters, let alone anyone being able to read a smart contract, let alone anybody, you know, what have you. And that's not a surprising point, but I think it is like becoming even more real.
I do wonder, and this is the first time I think I've ever kind of expressed this thought, so bear with me.
Yes, we get an original banger. We get first look.
I don't know if this is just kind of part of the speeding up of the process of us as older folk looking at people that are a generation below us and going, how do you not understand this? Where similarly, our own parents would look at us and go, how do you not understand what goes into your 401k? How do you not understand kind of the stock market? Before that, it might have been, how do you not understand how to fix a shelf? Before that, was, you know, how do you not understand how to dig a trench?
How do you not know how to kill a German in one of two wars?
I wasn't going to go that spicy. But, you know, like... I think the chart that goes in terms of, you know, kind of the technical knowledge required of things that we are then surprised that people don't know or care about is accelerating because a lot of it gets abstracted away for us, right? And for the most part, you know, for people who are doing things like, oh, I've just bought something on TikTok, and if it lands, they don't need to have cared, like, or learned, right? Because they've made bank. I don't need to have really, like... understood kind of how my leveraged ETF stuff works when I was tinkering around with brokerage stuff in banking, if it worked. And yeah, it's depressing, I suppose, but it's also, I guess, not to be, it's to be understood, right? You know, you see a lot of stuff kind of getting, reusing the word, abstracted away, or kind of, you know, other people will deal with it, like consequences of my actions or what have you. Yeah, I'm not really sure kind of how to conclude the thought.
No, I mean, it makes, well, you know, and I've actually said this on a previous one. I think I was talking with Burden, but I had a senior member of my company say this recently, and it really stuck with me. He said that, you know, we are at in the trade show that we are occupying, we are at the point where everyone is still showing the tech. The tech is still out on the tables. And things get really interesting from a retail perspective when the tech vanishes, right? When the tech is so understood or so in the background that it is now experiencing change. And we are at the point still where the tech is very much on the table in front of everybody. Yep. But the money is also on the table as well. This isn't, you know, people building the first computers and going to trade shows, but you know, and all I'm picturing is like some halt and catch fire shit of like guys building computers in their shed. Oh, good. You're probably the only other guy who would get that reference.
Yeah, I've seen halt and catch fire. Yeah.
It's only because Lee Pace is hot. We are at that point, except that at the same time, instead of dealing with, you know, I want to build a computer, it's we are building something. And then sitting directly next to that hypothetical machine is just a stack of fucking money to the ceiling. And so people are walking by and they go, well, I don't understand the tech, but I certainly understand.
I certainly see that. Yeah.
That is appealing to me. I think that is the dangle, right? That is what people.
I think it's funny you say this, right? So, the briefest of summaries. So, my PhD was on extending compilers for domain specific languages, which are languages written within programming languages to be able to add new features and extend the compiler with new features without editing anything else, right? So it was all kind of, and it all targeted a stack based language. And that stuff is frighteningly applicable to EVM, right? Because that's what the EVM is. It's a stack based execution layer. And it was actually that precisely that pulled me away from a career in banking into where I am now.
Yeah.
Because I was doing work in banking where I was programming for money and around money as opposed to programming money directly. And this is kind of a term that I keep coming back to, this moving from for money to with money. And I was thinking actually yesterday as well, you know, talking about, you know, the tech is still very visible. Mm-hmm. Back in 2008, I think everyone now talks about, you know, how it's so easy to model things using Mathematica and Wolfram Alpha.
And I remember literally the nerdiest kid in my high school being like, you got to check this Wolfram Alpha shit out. I was like, what the fuck
is that? That was me, dude. We'd finished our first year of university, and then we started our second one. We were doing a linear algebra course, and I booted down my door, and I went, you're not going to fucking believe this. It does it for free. and now it's everywhere, right? I was sitting there going, I would have paid any amount of money, because like it was, you know, that kind of notion of how do I like, kind of get the question into the right format to feed it to it, and then they'll do my work for me, and I'm walking away with a first class degree.
It's the dream, right? That is the technology. That is the promise of technology, theoretically, in like a utopian view, right? Is we will do this thing instead of now we are working 80 hours a week for minimum wage, which is what happened with technology. We would feed this robot this information. The robot would be like, here's the result. And you go, fantastic, $250,000 a year for me, please. Thank you. And that's the end of the day. That is an optimistic moment in human history.
So you having said this now kind of really reminds me of kind of that way that I felt when Wolfram first came out. And to be fair, I was just an undergraduate when this came out. But all I could think of was, this makes life so much easier for me.
Right.
And it did, except for when I got into like the like really deep theoretical stuff, because you can't really ask it stuff about like computational complexity. So there was a kind of like a hard barrier at which point it was like, well, I can't go any further than that. But it's pretty much the same, I think, now when you're dealing with like DeFi. You are you can't talk about DeFi or the derivatives that are on it, or kind of, you know, how you're in some curve vault that's wrapped around and put into an LP and then leveraged up to the tits. You can't talk about that without also fundamentally talking about the L1 or rollup or L2 that it's on. Like they're part of the same breath, because, you know, that factors into, you know, if you're talking about MEV, whether you're talking about kind of like, are the validators going to be up?
Right.
Are you going to be talking about, you know, kind of the gas, you know, the amount that you're going to be paying in for execution, and the language it's implemented in. And I have this vision that I think I always like to imagine that utopia is 5 to 10 years away, no matter how much time has passed. But once we get there, you know, it will kind of be this seamless thing. You know, the internet of money will finally cost 5 cents a transaction again. Thanks, Vitalik. And we won't think about it.
We will reach the diamond age, right? I mean, that's, you know, and that is the goal. Because, I mean, and you know, can be very blunt, like, you can talk about Wolfram Alpha solving or making something easier. It's very little that crypto actually makes easier. I mean, USDC, you can send around the world, you know, have some fiat conversion. That's a use case. Cross-border remittance, right, along the Japanese corridor. That is a use case. But what in terms of what it actually makes easier, the thing it actually makes easiest is separating fools from their money to
crypto. Yeah, no, I'd agree with that.
It's the possibility of making things easier that is so compelling. I also will say for my own thing, and I think this, you know, of the 20% of people that are in it, genuinely in it for the tech, and I even think 20% might be generous sometimes.
Yeah,
and I think that is still a dirty term. I think there is a substantial number of them that want and have an idealistic thing where, you know, they watch too much anime as a kid and they want to like change the world and they want to make a difference.
Yeah.
And I think this is the way to do it.
Like all the Dragon Balls, we're going to fix
literally, now. Right? Like you think you're fucking Goku and you're like, the way I'm going to fix the world is internet bean money. And then you see someone like selling an ape for more money than your family has ever had in the continuum of time. You're like, well,
yeah,
am I?
Jesus, when you put it like that, it's not inaccurate. That's a bit dark.
It is. I mean, literally. Well, it's funny. I mean, you know, there is a very unique pain to watching somebody who you don't think deserves money to like make more money than you. It is a different pain entirely to see someone
it's like that onion beige, right? Heartbreaking. The worst person you know just made an excellent point. It's very much the same energy.
It really feels it. And at the same time, I've watched, you know, a bunch of our friends like make money. Like I love seeing a win. I personally have never had a win. I feel like I'm overdue for one. I've actually just started DMing people and say win, but it is also, there's the spectacle of it, right? It is like that. It is all happening in the agora. It is all in this fucking public square.
Yeah, there is a lot to be said. Like, I didn't think I'd be saying this in the year of our Lord 2022, but it seems that there's so much alpha to overuse a dead horse of a word in simply being able to check the chain.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I'm showing my age here, where I just go, well, yeah, that's kind of how you worked it, right? You know, a bunch of us were reading stuff from the mempool in lieu of Etherscan because that's how we came up. Man, there was a great point that I was going to make, and it's completely slid out my mind. I'm blaming pale ale for it. Good work, me. It's that or the 6 caffeine pills I took before this. I can't tell which.
What is the deal with what's the deal with the caffeine pills, Lawrence?
Simply because my sleep. No, it's simply so that you get me at my best or worst.
You're always at your best. I've never had a... You're always at your best. I it was funny. I left a meeting pretty much directly to have... I pivoted from my work setup to my personal setup. And I paused for a minute. I'm like, I'm not there yet. So I went and I had a shot and then I had another shot. And now I'm drinking a beer. And I was like, if I come off, you know, in any way uncool, I'm talking to a guy who I personally believe to be like one of the funniest people I know. We have to like shape up for it. Well, I guess, you know, to like pivot away from that for a moment, like, you know, if you had what you talk about utopia being 5 to 10 years away, which I think is a great, no matter what, it is this thing that is a fixed distance always on the horizon, right? That it is, the curve will never, what is it? If you step halfway to the wall and then halfway of that distance, right, you will never reach the wall.
Yeah, it's Zeno's paradox.
Zeno's paradox. Good God, man. Jesus, Lord, this man. if we accept like this, you know, the utopia is Zeno's paradox. Like, what are you looking at in the next, you know, 5 years? What do you think is going to be like one of these dominant narratives, or maybe even aspirationally, what do you hope we are talking about for the next 5 years?
It's funny that you mentioned this because there was some, there was a thread that threw up, I think yesterday, that was, you know, kind of, where did you, it's been 2 years since DeFi Summer started. And the question was, where did you think that things would be now?
Yeah.
Have they borne out and why? Or haven't they, if they haven't? And I think, like, I'm very much like, I'm a financy guy. Like, you know, I really went through the maths undergrad to theoretical programmer to finance bro pipeline. So I think in terms of like, you know, kind of derivatives and what have you. And so I was really expecting there to be a lot more in terms of kind of options with deep liquidity and, you know, kind of a lot more real world assets that were synthesized. And the most creative thing I think I've seen recently has been like, was Squeeze. And I don't know if that's down to regulatory pressure or just, you know, kind of, I don't want to call it the inability to kind of manifest mm-hmm. other ideas mm-hmm. or the fact that you really do just need deep pockets to kind of make something feasible, even if you've created it. I don't know if I have enough of a fixed vision to say what I would like things to look like. I was talking to someone the other day about where I think things are going in terms of KYC. Because I think inevitably, like here in the UK, we've just gone through the, we've just passed through the veil into another tax year. And you notice probably a mini dump while everyone just immediately panic sold their alts because sure. they were like, holy shit, I do actually have a bill to pay because otherwise I'm going to get taken out by the beef eaters. When it comes to things like, you know, tax, right? People talking a bunch on Twitter about how, you know, their joke is that they're just going to send like a forklift of stuff over to HMRC or the IRS and go, here are right. my 20,000 transactions, good luck. And I do think that one of the things that we're eventually going to end up seeing are things like all of your DeFi funny money, like funny stuff is just going to be, you know, kind of vague operations on chain, and the taxable events are going to be stuff that's brought into centralized exchanges. Sure. And when it comes to stuff that actually kind of gets engaged with in terms of fiat on-ramps and off-ramps, you're going to end up seeing kind of KYC subnets or side chains where you kind of have to provide your details as a precondition of being whitelisted.
Of course.
So let's say that like Aave or Compound finally do have a, right, you know, we've been blessed with a variant that kind of any exchange or bank will allow us to get into or out of. But the consequence of that is that you have to give, you have to let Sam scan your eyeballs. And I think that, and this will probably be a spit in the eye of the cypherpunks that originally kind of envisioned Bitcoin and its purpose. But I think that's going to be accepted kind of quite widely as a way to kind of, you know, finally fiddle about on chain. The degree to which that ends up just being a kind of a mockery of the current system, I don't know. I realize that the question was about what do you think of utopia? And
I think that's a vastly more interesting answer. And you know, it's funny, changes to KYC come up on this podcast in our venerable history of 5 episodes, really frequently, almost every time, because it is a big area that I'm thinking about. I also actively work tangentially near it. You know, I think we're already seeing I think it's probably people's de facto mindset that whatever happens on chain or in DeFi isn't real until it hits a centralized exchange. I think most people, you know, not hoping that the IRS comes after me, but I certainly think of it that way. Unless it happened on a centralized exchange, there's good fucking luck, you know? But I think that will also, the way it will seep into DeFi is, and you know, to use a well-heeled term is understanding counterparty risk. Yep. And that is when, because that's what the TradFi money needs to come in, right? They need to understand counterparty risk. They need to understand that they're not violating sanctions, money laundering, terrorist financing laws, etc. That's why things like Verite or Verity, whatever, that got announced a little bit ago. That's why those things exist, right? They exist to give a mechanism for traditional finance to go on Aave and to fucking lend or to borrow or to do whatever, and to do so in a way that is relatively compliant.
For the last 2 years, I've been receiving messages in my inbox asking to help kind of build together a credit scoring system for DeFi.
But I do think that's people in the fucking head in the back of an alley.
I've always kind of politely declined. Not because, again, because of my background, not even because I think that it's an attack, but more because I just don't think it's feasible in current form. And again, I think if I'm optimistically thinking 5-10 years ahead, I still don't know if we'll be there. I very frequently have conversations with my wife about, you know, okay, well, you know, you say you've got these funds, how are you going to get them out? And I suspect that anyone listening to this that is married or in a long-term relationship or even has overbearing parents will, you know, resonate with this conversation. They're going, you know, like, okay, you're not just Walter Mitty, you know, kind of, where is it?
Right, exactly.
And so I think one of the things that okay, if you wanted me to say, you know, what I think of as utopia, in terms of like kind of the crypto vision, I want to loop back to crypto as a vision, in a bit, is one of the things that I think needs to happen, and I expounded on this on a Mirror article a while ago, was this kind of need for an emergence of a parallel financial system, where it's where we're not just strangle-held at central exchange points, right? I've had more bank accounts closed than I care to mention, simply for trying to pull out kind of middle four figures, you know, and everyone's seen these. I think someone fairly well-known on CT got shut down today, like, again, no reason, whatever. And I don't know where the impetus for kind of convincing my garage or my local, like, carpet fitter is going to come from kind of accepting stables. I don't know if perhaps part of it is going to be kind of the tax authorities accepting stables as a method of payment. This also entirely depends then on the notion of payment that they accept as legitimate. Like, for example, I don't think they would accept some kind of witchcraft-backed stablecoin, but perhaps something that was backed, you know, with real-world assets. So, you know, perhaps DAI if the RWA stuff really takes off. I'd like to imagine I'd eventually be able to, yeah, pay my tax, pay my, sure, you know, kind of utilities, yeah, pay my this, that, and the other in with stables or with ETH, should I so choose, you know, the gas of the worldwide computer. And I think that worldwide acceptance of crypto, if it's a good thing, and I still don't have an answer for whether that's a good thing, will be a game of inches where, you know, all of a sudden it'll be, you can buy your groceries with it. Next thing, you'll be able to pay your utilities with it. The next thing is, you know, you can, I can buy step. I guess a good step would be, I can be like, an intermediate step we could do today is I could trade Steam skins, the OG NFTs into crypto.
It is very funny how anti crypto and anti NFT they have become.
I have such a great time. I said, I am no great lover of NFTs. I think they're funny. I don't think they're worth much in their current JPEG-y form. There's a couple of like implementations that I think are really interesting in terms of kind of access to things, but I think that also gets quite nightmarish quite quick. But when I damn it, I've lost my point again. fuck's sake, I'm not good at this.
It's you're doing fantastic. It is always, in many ways, the job of the critic is easy. In many ways, the job of the interviewer is easy. I just get to like, be like, yeah, so
true. Yeah, talk about this.
Lauren, so true, King. Go off, Lawrence. Go tell off, him. King. Let him know, Lawrence.
talk to him. but yeah, like, man, no, I've lost the plot completely. You might have to cut that completely off.
Oh, that's, look, to be honest with you, I'm going to edit out. Everyone gets like two or three edits.
Yeah.
I'll cut, but there are sometimes it's just too funny not to cut, or it's too rich.
Yeah, no, fine. Understood.
Well, no,
I got so heated thinking about NFTs and I completely lost the plot.
Well, you know, speaking of, if you want to say the real issue with NFTs, right? If you want to talk about the game of inches, it is when NFTs or driver's licenses are NFTs, movie tickets are NFTs, the concert tickets, vaccination cards, what have you, right? The practical uses there. And traditionally speaking, what are two of the greatest drivers of new technology adoption are pornography and video games. And until they get behind cryptocurrency, right? What was it? It didn't, pornography determined that the VHS was the dominant.
I suppose Betamax.
Right? Yeah, of course. Only, So until, you know, and in the same thing with video games, it is kind of to everyone's detriment. Like that video game companies are so are anti it, and but then again, at the same time, the very first stop there would be Skyrim horse armor all over again, where people, you know, they're just selling you a totally bullshit cosmetic thing for whatever.
Yep.
And you know, even though I make NFTs that no one buys, I am no great fan of NFTs either in their current iteration, mainly because I think that, you know, the division between what is a speculative asset and what is something is that has any form of utility, the minute you make the thing with utility also speculative is the day you lose, right? I mean, you know, that's the argument with governance tokens. Right? If your governance token is also a speculative asset, you wind up with no different situation than an oligarchy, a plutocracy, what have you. Fortunately, there's never going to be a fucking use for any of these ugly ass, like, I don't know, the worst art you've ever, the worst Gorillaz fan art you've ever seen.
Yeah, the kind of stuff that you would send your child to boarding school for producing.
The look of a lion doing like the DreamWorks smirk with like the one eyebrow raised. It is so fucking, you know what it is? I think this is a problem. It's embarrassing. It's not sexy. It's not cool. No one cool is doing it. I get like Snoop Dogg is doing it. He's cool.
Snoop Dogg was given one.
And since we're all, you know, ain't on, the hot people among us can't be like, I'm sexy and I do crypto. It's all like fucking, you know, the worst guys on Instagram with the flowy, fluffy lacrosse hair being like, my next great 50x flip. And it's just XRP every time.
Yeah, every time. Well, it's like Logan Paul now. It's Liquid Marketplace, right? Like, man is desperate to sell his Pikachu Illustrator card.
This motherfucker,
any length.
One of the greatest L takers in human history for being so famous and having so much money. One of the great, like, true L machines, like, terrible takes. Remember when he rolled up on, like, a dead body in the fucking suicide forest?
Yeah, actually, I remember.
You know what people tune into this podcast to hear? Two 30-year-old men talking about the lives of famous YouTubers. Do you guys it's very Jay Leno. You guys remember when Logan Paul ran up on a dead body? It's like,
I remember.
Our audience is screaming at the screen. The 19-year-old are like, shut the fuck up.
Please
nobody
about
cares about this
else.
Dog shit. I mean, fine. You know what? Let's give the people what they want. I sourced a couple questions from group chats. I have some general ones. I like finishing on an unhinged note because you said some really smart things today, and I definitely nodded in agreement with them and did appropriate I couldn't have said it better.
I just wanted you to fuck me up with unhinged questions.
There was one period, like for like 2 hours, where my voice sounded fucking awesome, and then like I immediately lost it. Like I sounded so cool, and now I just kind of sound like nasally and shitty.
It's the god power of hitting the vocal fry exactly right.
Yeah, I mean,
you sound like
if I want to take it down, if I want to do the corpse husband and just talk like,
I'm not even going to try and insult myself by trying it myself. I've tried in the past, doesn't work.
You can just be, just like imagine just like making music for like the worst, like 17-year-old girls ever, and your thing is just like, I talk like this, and I fuck bitches, and I have a chain. And it's like, bitch, no, you don't. You have a degenerative disease, motherfucker.
Talk to him.
I can't. I'm fully capping because I love that aesthetic. It's like, I look like such a, I literally look like a 17-year-old who got like the shittiest tattoos out back of a Walmart. I look like I should be selling meth in the GameStop parking lot to try and like get enough money to buy COD.
Oh, good. Or more GME.
All right. I ask these questions. I ask some questions that I ask everybody. And some people, you know, props to them, you know, they have intelligent answers. Just like really, let's fucking get the dick on the table. Let's get a little frisky. Let's get a little shock shot. God, it would be so nice if I had a soundboard. You're listening to Lawrence and the Fox. Send us a photo of your hottest mom and you get 2 tickets to Nickelback. 97.9 The Douche.
If it's a picture of God King's mom, you're disqualified from all future entries. We've all seen that's me fucking, you know, absolutely spoken for. Goddamn.
I imagine what would be really funny is like imagining you getting a DM from someone and being like, and you're like, yes, you do. Yeah, it's on there.
Absolutely,
it's
true.
Like, I know where you live. It's like, yeah, I talk about where I live. Yeah, absolutely. It's like, I have a photo of you and your wife. And you're like, yeah, I posted it. Yeah, for sure. When you come to fucking Newcastle upon Tyne upon Burnbridge upon Westershire and kill me.
That's pretty much every village in the UK's name. If it hasn't got at least one shire or two upon.
I love a shire. Okay, well, here's, you know, the usual first question I ask is like, where does your handle come from? Yours, I imagine, comes from your parents / God himself, because it is your name. But where is this new? You've just done a rebrand.
Yes, so the new one's Function Zero. And this is basically me going, tell me that you like mathematical analysis without me telling you you like mathematical analysis, right? I got really into the idea before I started my undergrad degree that I was going to be a good maths guy. And the reason for that was simply that my maths teacher at the time told me that I was not going to be able to cope doing a maths degree.
Wow.
So I did my entire career to spite my 17-year-old maths teacher.
The truly great motivator of any pedantic man.
I I think it's probably not unfair to say that everything I've done in my life has been powered by spite. And it's like kind of from whence was the seed where I was like, oh, I should learn how functions work. And the most descriptive thing that you can know about functions are their zeros, ergo function zero.
Very fun. Do you get a lot of play off of that one? Are people really messaging you being like, I love this?
Oh, yeah. Just you would not believe the amount of e-girls that I get.
I imagine there's a lot of e-girls in your DMs being like, Lawrence, I love functions and how there's zero of them. And
some of the thottiest shit you've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That, I mean, we are heading there. It will get there eventually. You certainly have a group of unhinged people who every time you post a photo of yourself say things like, do the panting emoji. Let's talk about that. You recently became a little bit of a community meme when notable fellow scholar, 12-year-old with a credit card, face doxed as you.
Yes.
What was that experience like? Was that fun? Did you love that?
That was, I'll tell you what I ended up with. That was weird because, you know, we were joking about stuff that we posted at April Fool's. And I walked away from my machine, I think to feed my dog, and I sat down, and all of a sudden I opened up group chat and I saw myself, and not just myself, but a picture that I've used on LinkedIn, and like my blood ran cold for a solid 10 seconds. I was like, what is going on? So click, realize what's going on. I see 50 likes, 60 likes, something like a classic preteen post. And yeah, I think I was drinking some iced tea at the time, and yeah, I ended up wiping stuff off my monitor. So this is great. This is absolutely perfect. fantastic. Within about maybe 3 minutes, I got the first DM going, dude, I didn't know you were based enough to have an account with actual followers. I'm like, I know you've been following me on my alt for 3 years, dude. But yeah, I tell you, the thing that entertained me the most then was kind of the variety of comments, right? Things like, so going from the self-flattering stuff, like cute, nice glasses, great eyes,
sexy guy,
I'm divorced, me and my 31-year-old friends want to meet up, to classic Redditor, soyjack cuck, should not be near children, several ewes. It was great. I really ran the gamut, in a solid 2-hour period.
You have and such a stronger sense of self than I do.
I came out for a better, stronger person.
That would have set me back. Well, only because I'm a very egotistical and very vain person. I'm Yukio Mishima style obsessed with dying at my most beautiful, just because which I feel like goes into my persona. But it was one of those funny things because as any meme that spawns in a group chat behind a closed door, the people who are in on it are all doing different things to be very funny. But the greatest sources of comedy are the random 75 follower reply guy who follows 12-year-old being like, "Oh, is this you? Is this you, sir? Sir, sir, revealing yourself, sir. Excellent to see you, sir."
Completely ruined the appeal of the account. Blocked, unfollowed.
I thought you were a frog. I thought you were a sexy frog.
I can't believe it. Yeah, show the credit card. I think there is an art. As someone who, on the account that I currently use and has had kind of, for me, quite significant growth recently, been a reply guy for quite some time, there is an art to it.
Of course.
Right? You don't just decide to be a reply guy. You study the blade first.
Well, and while you were acquiring hose, I was studying the blade of being a reply guy. I was commenting on Kobe.
Exactly, right? And all I'll say is that the current crop need to do their homework. I'm sure that everyone will say this. I love the reply guys that I have, and it feels derogatory to call them reply guys because I consider them friends.
That is a kind, magnanimous, that's the action of a king, right? That is what a prince does, is adore. And as speaking as someone who is kind of a reply guy to you, even though we know each other, one of my favorite things to do is just reply guy on your shit at 5 in the morning and be like, another great tweet, Lawrence. Golf emoji of the guy just in that sweet drive. It is funny, even as a relatively small account, having my own reply guys is very funny. But watching the memetic culture around reply guys, I do really enjoy. If someone's good at the craft, I'm like, not only am I following you back, but I will like your bizarre reply to show you that you are doing something above and beyond.
Yeah.
You did a guy the other day, though, by being a reply guy. Am I incorrect? Or did who did that? One of you guys did that. Didn't you, like, ratio a check mark?
Oh, it was that cheese guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. The guy who said that, yeah, cheese is bad and no cult. There's a reason that most cultures hadn't developed it. And someone points out that cheese was literally a culture.
Literally a culture. the nerd-ass pedant that lives inside of all of us waiting to push up our glasses. No. I literally am pushing up my glasses right now going, actually, excuse me, sir.
I think you're fine. Yep. All I'll say is no mercy for check marks. None whatsoever.
We got to put them all to the sword.
Yeah.
And it's a great shame that we know some people who have them because
who have check marks. Some of the worst people.
It's the crying. It's the
best and worst people I know, and I will miss them come the revolution.
Oh, the gif of my man's crying when he's pulling the trigger, just being like me when I have to put down Tony Hawk. It's like me when I have to put down Kobe.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry.
I think this is one of the things that I don't know if this is just because I'm pretty good at shitposting, but like I get a lot of people who are genuinely surprised that I'm 33. Because like they said, no one knew who I was until I put on the Milady and finally realized
who I was until I put on this PFP.
And finally, like, decided, right, after 6 months of, bag holding this thing from August, and I've always found them quite cute, just be like, right, this is where everyone gets both barrels. And,
greatest M'lady whale, if I'm not mistaken. You are the single...
No, there are people who hold far, far more than me. There was a point where I had a substantial number. This is no more. So there will be a day when the inevitable ape flipping happens, and I will change my tune on the utility of NFTs.
Listen, this thing is art. Put this M'lady in the MoMA.
I do have something positive to say about the idea of avant-garde NFTs.
Oh, well, the Neo Chibi aesthetic. I've actually like talked about this before.
Neo Chibi? Neo Chibi? I didn't even know that was a word.
It really, because it is also like some fucked up sound, like the ones that have like the little like fuckboy tattoos on the face, like the gothic script. I'm just like, this is so dialed to an aesthetic. And I think maybe that's like the problem with NFTs is that they look whack. They're for an audience that isn't us. They're for an audience of guys who either airbrush their Winnebagos so that they could go down and live on the beach for like 5 months because they like trade stocks on their phone, or it's for like the like people who thought the gorillas were really good, but maybe a little too challenging. It's that pile of art. And then something like M'lady's come along and you see it and it's like, this is so dialed to my interests. It's like, it is the aesthetic of the dot hack PS2 games. Like this, I was just like, this is so beautiful. I, of course, made a critical mistake of showing a M'lady to my wife and being like, I'm going to buy one of these. She's like, the fuck you are. And so
she's like, you are absolutely fucking not. One of the things that I do find fascinating, like the one thing that I think, in terms of like, if there was a memetics division that was watching all of crypto, the thing that I enjoy the most is kind of like the construction of narratives.
Mm-hmm.
And like general personality traits, like everyone who owns an ape gives their stuff away or proposes to their wife and then gets shown up on OnlyFans 2 hours later, which was one of like an L, like with the force of the fist of Zeus.
It took one's breath away. It was a breathtaking L.
but that kind of this adoption of, like how M'lady's all of a sudden became this kind of the revanchist in the term, like in the sense of, this is coolness that belongs to us, cypherpunk, schizophrenic, hyperviolent, Clockwork Orange stuff.
Unhinged. Oh my god. Well, and the speed with which it developed, the M'lady meltdown account, what I like, even you putting your the Bane mask on the M'lady, I was just like, there is so much happening. I think what the thing is like, there's, if we want to go back to it an earlier, I'm gonna link it back. If we go back earlier to being like, there needs to be the stress relief, crypto should be a little bit fun because all this shit is inherently funny and fun.
Yeah.
Bored apes seem fundamentally humorless. They seem bereft of like humor and joy and sexiness. And M'lady seem like these are for people who are like, who are trying to have the most schizophrenic fun. And I've said this before. I said this in a previous interview where
I said, like, one of crypto Twitter's worst traits is that it doesn't know when a joke is done.
Yeah.
And weirdly enough, with Miladies, I've seen people kind of voluntarily take the mask off and go, my time here is done. This was fun. And that makes it even more beautiful. It makes it even more organic. It was like an enjoyable thing to see.
Trip into schizophrenia.
Yeah. It was kind of a hot boy summer. Like it was like, oh my gosh, we had this weird winter thing happen where everyone went, got to be a little deranged. And then we went back. I will say, I'm glad that people are switching. I can't tell any of you apart with the Miladies on. I would be like, who is this? I'd be like, there's no way.
I just had a 2 month period where all I did was went on Spaces and taught people how to build fertilizer bombs. It was great.
I mean, literally there was one person who like uploaded 3D printer ghost gun.
Gosh.
I was like, so sick. Yeah, I mean, it's so good when we're all going to get arrested for this.
We're going to be in a cell together.
Oh
it's
my
fine.
God! Yeah, this terrorist cell.
But wrapping up the this question and the point on NFTs, you say that the Bored Apes are soulless. I will casually remind you of the immortal recent Razor tweet that the World of Women NFTs are what you would create if you hated women. Look me in the eyes and tell me that I'm wrong.
My wife is an artist, and when I first explained NFTs, she looked me square in the eyes and said, "You need to stop using the word art for this.
Yep.
The word art can't come in relation with this." And as much as, you know, I was one of those people, you know, edgy teenager being always like, video games are art, which, you know, they are. And look at
Bioware
things are art. Looking at NFTs was finally the first time, as you said earlier, we're old men yelling at clouds. I got to lean back in my Barca lounger, mm-hmm. put my feet up, you know, with my slippers, and I go, this
like,
shit is not fucking art. There is nothing here compelling about this. This is, you know, so that is nice. I guess, you know, my to keep the train rolling, we did have some questions from the Peanut Gallery for you.
Yep.
One of them, and I won't say the name of the group chat, so I'll make it a more abstractive question. This one comes to us courtesy of Zero X Carnation, friend of all of us. Lawrence, who among your friends would make a good concubine?
For
you specifically, not in general, for you.
The problem here is that I don't want to mention someone that I'm actually friends with in real life or work with on the regular, because otherwise when they inevitably hear this, that creates an unbearable sexual tension that, as a married man, I don't need in my life.
Can you imagine the visceral thrill of they listen to a podcast that has probably 200 listeners, and they somehow get to this snippet of it, and they're like, Lawrence feels what way about me? Lawrence, I've always felt the same.
Realize this is meant to be a midweek, like, or rather an unhinged question. Are we talking about purely a physical concubine? Are we talking about an intellectual concubine?
Wow.
Just someone
this
I have
is
to
the
hand?
Most you clarifying question, right? Because like the easy joke that you just go right over home plate is it's like Carnation because they have lewds or like whatever, right? Or like the Heartwood because, you know, I like innuendo. To delineate it, to try and like bifurcate the question, to try and like dig down into
specify
some type of, like,
the way in which I'm answering this question.
It is actually a more unhinged and more uncomfortable answer than I was ever than I ever had kind of, you know, I was like, this one's going to be, well, whatever, dumb. It's like, my man is over here pulling up the Excel going, I have to look at the traits, the rarity, foot rubs, breakfast. Do they know songs? Can they play the zither? Do they know all of the poetic styles can they read the Rubaiyat? Do they know how to create sherbet?
Congratulations, you finally got an insight into my mind. I will answer two questions off the flash. Carnation is the one answer, purely physically, because they have so many good lewds. Intellectually, it's got to be Dystopia Breaker.
That is such a based answer, and I actually take back all of the mean things I just said dunking on you, because it is actually the smart, I will say the smart man's answer. That is so true, and I will also say, The Dystopia Breakers is the end, you know, you're in the bunker together as the world is falling apart, cleaning the rifles that you've printed from the ghost PCs. And
tweeting about how we've managed to break the NIST
together. It is a romantic, it is a truly beautiful, I you know what, Lawrence, I actually owe you an apology. That was an exceptional answer.
Recently, a notable crypto publication published a quote of yours and identified you as a scholar. Can you just say what it feels like to be a scholar, as you know, one scholar to another?
I'll tell you what, right? Answering in seriousness, right? There was a time in my life about a decade ago, pretty much to the year, where I think being called a scholar was one of the most important things to me. Like, I needed the title. I needed the props associated with having a doctorate. Someone asked me the other day whether they should do a PhD. And I answered with, if it's not the kind of thing that's really keeping you up at night, the fact that you don't have one, then you should do it.
Right.
And especially not if you're paying for it. The irony is that now having had it, I cringe when people call me doctor, even though in chats I'm called doc. And I don't use that much of the kind of my subject, like expert matter. Mm-hmm. And I want to say there's part of me that likes being called a scholar because it finally kind of validates, like, you know, 15 years of thing. But at the same time, I opened myself up to a fucking massive bunch of goals, right?
I was going to say, was the memes, shall we say, the trolling from being referred to it? I mean, I remember seeing the minute someone figured out it said scholar next to your name. It was like, it was
yo, someone framed this.
I was like, this is happening. Oh my God. God, yeah. I mean, well, you know, congratulations on being identified as a preeminent scholar, and my deep condolences for everything that happened that day of people going, my scholar friend Lawrence.
Yeah, I enjoyed it deeply. I have enough of an ego to admit that, like, it did flare something up in me, and enough of an underdeveloped cringe gland to then know to admit that I then spent 3 hours walking around the park with my dog.
Just being like, I, you know what? If someone said one nice thing,
I'm
like,
go touch some grass.
Excuse me, I'm a scholar, and I'm walking through this park. A scholar is coming through. Chance to flex, maybe some muscles here of age. What is your favorite anime of all time?
I want to kind of really like mid this with a with an answer like Dragon Ball Z. It's not true. I think. I'm going to admit something now that might offend quite a bunch of people. I have not watched that much anime. When I was younger, I did kind of dig into it a little bit. I watched some shows like Vandred. I watched some Full Metal Alchemist. I still think, simply because I remember being in a good place in my life when I watched it, that Vandred is probably my favorite.
Of all the things you've said today, that is the most controversial. Like, I have not watched. You know what? I'm going to leave this in only because I think what happens after is you've brought it on yourself. You've gained these people's trust of us anime PFPs. And yeah, like you could have even, you know what you could have done? You could have just said Cowboy Bebop and then everyone would have been like, sure. Yep.
Yeah, cool. That's a pretty mid answer.
Yeah. They've been like, yep. Yeah. Not the, well, hey, everyone's get their thing. We pass in silence. Lawrence goes, you know, I want to say Dragon Ball Z. And everyone listening say, hey, whoa, hold up there. Did Lawrence just say Dragon Ball Z? The best anime? Wow. Well, it takes a brave man to do that, and I will acknowledge
that. I didn't answer that. I said Vandred. And
you prevaricated.
I have been trying to go through Tokyo Ghoul recently.
Well, I just read it. The anime is trash. Just read it. The manga is way better. It's so much better. I will say that. Also, I wonder why you possibly would be consuming that.
I couldn't possibly tell you.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things that I really enjoyed recently is, I live basically in a forest, and there's a lot of grassland around me. And with that said, even though I do have all this forest around and I do just mostly tinker around on the computer, there are times where I'm like, I'm busy. I can't go and walk my dog while my wife's at work. So I have a dog walker.
Gosh.
And she, very, very lovely girl, comes over. I've known her for about 2 and a bit years now. And we always kind of just spoke as kind of like, oh, customer client, until I mentioned offhand one day that I was watching Tokyo Ghoul and everything changed.
The walls fell down.
We're best friends now.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
It's, the power of weebs.
Well, I will say it is a modern privilege. And I've actually told this story before, but I had like a 18-year-old coworker when I was in my previous
profession. And she came in one day with like her backpack from school and was covered with anime shit. And I was like, man, that must be really hard for you. And I said to her, I'm like, yeah, I just want to let you know, like, it's cool. I watch anime. She's like, everyone watches anime, old man. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, cool. When I was in middle school or high school, it was definitely not the case. And now apparently it's cool, yep, and hip hop and.
Well, so there's a reason that I recently bookmarked Big D's list as an anime list.
It's a cultured list.
For research purposes. Yeah, it's to become a better human.
In the interest of maintaining the peace, I won't share maybe some fringe opinions I have, but it is a respectable list. To conclude our last few questions, who do you think is the most underrated poster on crypto Twitter?
Oh, dear. I was thinking about doing something recently, which was, you know, kind of top people under 500 that you should follow for deranged takes. Oh man, you got me thinking now. I don't want to answer anyone that I know or speak to kind of regularly in a group chat because it just feels like blue elephant sucking own dick meme.
That is so nice because the first two guests, literally, I'm not making this up, said me. And I was like,
I think in terms of pure entertainment value, there's a lot to be said for Azeroth.
I knew it. I knew the minute I was going to ask the question. It's my answer as well. I cannot tell people how much they should go follow. It's a joy in the day to get to see something like, damn, I'm here in the Caribbean and life is ending. Like just like on the, like, different, it feels like computer generated poetry. Like there
is
no,
it really, really is proper too rare to live, too weird to die shit.
Yeah. And that recently getting to see them interact with people who I consider to be like serious and intelligent people and just saying like bonkers, ludicrous. I saw I think they said that just said, I'm a fucking dangerous guy. And I was like, that is an incredible, like, what a mind boggling thing to say. I'm a dangerous guy.
I want to be him.
Yeah, I wish I was that uninhibited. Like, here's a tweet from 17 hours ago. You guys low-key made billions off me. What am I fighting you for anymore? Just like, a fox jumps over the, like, it's like every character in the English language is contained in one sentence. It's like Sumerian poetry. Like, I find it just absolutely gripping. And then, like, literally the next tweet will be, like, just like, absolutely unhinged and uncomfortable.
Thinking about you while I jerk off. It's just absolute masterclass stuff.
It really may be the best to ever do it. well, I will say, Lords, this has been an absolutely fun, riotous time. I think also maybe our longest episode, which is excellent and I enjoy. Before we go, I do just want to say, I know we still have to do another one where I believe you, 12-year-old and Ito are coming on. We're going to do a little panel show, which I'm very much looking forward to. And absolutely no alpha episode. We might actually just do that one on Twitch. We might do a live stream. Before we go, is there any shout out, any plug, anything that you want to make known to the wider world?
I'm going to be really disappointing here and say that the things that I'm trying to move, like,
oh my God, he's going to say
the G in lasagna. Oh my, and you can keep me silent.
Folks,
and
whoever, for the young people listening at home, that is the guarantee that you are talking to a man born before 1993 right there. That is the giveaway of all giveaways. I knew what he was going to say before he said it. And my back tensed. I felt something happening to my spine. I said, this motherfucker is going to say real cheese move in silence like lasagna. I know he is. Not building in stealth, what you could say, or not being like low key or keeping it on the DL, which now also has a different meaning. Let me say,
there it comes. Like, oh, now. I'm tinkering about with some work with a hedge fund, but that's not really something that can be kind of shouted out about. I've alluded to some of the other stuff I'm doing in terms of education. I will be rotating back into that in a kind of a more full-time capacity, being a teacher again. Otherwise, I would only like to shout out everyone that's listening to this, which is a horrendously trite answer, and I'm going to blame two beers on that.
I like it. That's a good answer to anything. Ladies and gentlemen, the scholar himself,
Dr. Lawrence, at function zero on Twitter for all of you math heads. Please do follow him. Please do take the time if you can to subscribe to this podcast. Leave us a rating if you can. And we will be back next week with yet another wonderful interview. Lawrence, thank you so much. Genuinely, it's been the highlight of my week talking to you.
Thank you very much. And you, mine.
We'll see you all next time. Thank you. All right. Boom. Fun.
Good stuff.